Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording of our Tuesday evening Dhamma class at Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey. My Dhamma talk and our Sangha discussion is on the Bhadrakarata Sutta, the Sutta on Developing an Auspicious Day. This talk is recorded on March 28, 2017. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation. Thank you. Peace.
Tonight's Sutta is called the Bhadrakarata Sutta. Mindfulness of what is occurring is the title, but the word Bhadrakarata is a Pali word that means an auspicious day. And so the Buddha is teaching that a day that we live fully mindfully is an auspicious day. It's a great little sutta. The Bhadrakarata Sutta teaches the importance of being mindfully present of life as life unfolds. Everything the Buddha taught during his 45-year teaching career was taught in the context of developing understanding of Four Noble Truths and release from clinging to self-referential views rooted in ignorance of those Four Truths. The title of the sutta means an auspicious day. An auspicious day in this context refers to a day that is significantly favorable towards developing awakening, as the Buddha defines awakening, developing a profound understanding of dukkha, and recognizing and abandoning all self-referential views rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. Here the Buddha references the five clinging aggregates of form, feeling, perceptions, mental fabrications, and confused consciousness to describe an ignorant view of self. And this, the five clinging aggregates are very, very difficult for people to grasp, many people at first, but all that the Buddha is describing and using those five words to describe a temporary self that is rooted in ignorant views. And because we don't understand who we are, we create an identity over a physical body, over feelings that arise. Remember, feelings in this sense is just anything that's a disturbance in the mind. Perceptions that follow from that disturbance. Mental fabrications that follow from that. Remember, they're fabrications that are rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. And the resulting ongoing consciousness or ongoing thinking that is rooted in that ignorance. That's all the five clinging aggregates are. Maybe another simple way of saying it is that the five clinging aggregates are the vehicle that we drive or ride to experience our ignorant views, which means that we can stop driving it and stop taking it for a ride. And a mindful day is a good way of getting towards that. The Bhadrakarata Sutta. The Buddha was staying in Sabati at Jita's Grove, Anathapindika's monastery. There he addressed the monks and nuns. Friends, I will teach you the meaning of an auspicious day. You ready? Do not chase after the past or project your thoughts to the future. What do we do in meditation? We deepen our concentration so that we can be present and not be distracted to the past and to the future. What's so funny?
Bobby's already having a hard time with it.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I'm really good at the five cleaning. I just realized.
I'm glad you are. That's an auspicious beginning. Let me go back to that first one. Do not chase after the past or project your thoughts to the future. Not entangled with the world, be mindful of only what is occurring. Kind of the same thing, but putting a focus on staying out of the world. Free of distraction, well concentrated, develop compassion informed by wisdom. So he's not just saying, just be loving towards all, because he understands that that is nearly impossible unless we have the wisdom that's developed through the Eightfold Path. And I'm talking about true effective compassion. Mindfully engage with what is skillful. What is skillful? The Eightfold Path. And now you also have to remember that this is in context of everything else he's taught. He's already taught the assembled, the Dhamma, the Eightfold Path, and understanding of the Four Noble Truths. He's probably touched on a lot of other things too. So he's talking to people that already understand what the Dhamma is. And now he's explaining to them how they can have one auspicious day after another. The future is uncertain, and death occurs equally for all. He touches on something that most of us don't ever want to think about, that death is a part of life. And the reason why it's important, remember, in this context of an auspicious day, this could be the last one you have. Could be the last minute that you have. Why spend your last minutes in this incredible thing that we have going on, stuck in the past or projected into the future? Why not be fully present? And how do we do it? Through the Eightfold Path. Those who remain mindfully engaged with life as life occurs throughout the day have had a truly auspicious day. And again, it all refers back to everything he ever taught, including not being distracted by dukkha, by confusion, deluded thinking, and suffering. He doesn't leave us there, though. And how does one avoid chasing after the past? One does not get carried away with the delight that in the past I had such a form, meaning a body. In the past I had such a feeling. In the past I had such a perception. In the past I had such a fabrication. In the past I had such a consciousness. This is called not chasing after the past. You see the relation to the five clinging aggregates? We're stuck in these views. And whenever we think about something in the past, we can't help but it be a self-referential thought or a thought process. And he's saying very clearly, when you find yourself stuck in the past, get out of it. Bring yourself into what's occurring. There is no value in living in memories, especially when those memories are rooted in self-referential views. And if they are rooted in self-referential views, it's very hard to get out of the past, isn't it? But when we recognize, use that little trick, this is not me, this is not mine, this is not who I am, you can apply it to just a moment ago or 20 years ago, or in my case, 61 years ago. I can't remember that far back. But when I'm stuck in the past and I'm ruminating over something that may be missing in my life, it's very easy now to remember, wait a minute, I want to have an auspicious day. That's not me, that's not mine, that's not who I am. And who am I? What's occurring right now is who I am. And it's all that I can ever be. Of course, that's everything. And how does one not project their thoughts onto the future? One does not get carried away with delight that in the future I might have such a form, like I might grow hair again. In the future I might have such a feeling, a really good feeling, or maybe an unpleasant feeling. In the future, I might have such a perception, meaning a better perception. I might be smarter than I am now if I can just get there. You're losing what's occurring right now, aren't you? In the future, I might have such a fabrication. In the future, I might have such a consciousness. This is a trap that we can even fall into in the Dhamma. If I just do it right, meditate long enough, and integrate the Eightfold Path, at some point in the future, I'm just going to be wonderful. I'll be an awakened human being. Rather than miss what's occurring right now, which is blocking you from getting to that awakened state. You can't skip any steps. And notice the I-making in those, what the Buddha's pointing out. I might have this, I might have that, I might have this feeling, I might have this perception, or why did this happen to me yesterday or last week? It's all part of I-making. This is not me, this is not mine, this is not who I am. And obviously, there's no true reality in the past. And of course, it's easier to see that there's no true reality in the future, because even when we're referring back to something that happened a minute ago or 30 years ago, it's still through the filter of our memories and our perceptions at that time, which we know cloud everything. Yeah. Even something that, I wish Anthony was here tonight because he could talk about it. Even in court cases, they know that eyewitness statements are almost useless, even though they tend to use them. Because you can have five people see the same accident and they see it exactly, all of them see it differently. You know, but yet, they would each insist that I'm looking at reality right now. There's no reality in that. And how does one become entangled with the world? An uninstructed, ordinary person, lacking understanding of the Dhamma, sees form as the self or the self as form. In other words, this is all that I am. I've identified myself as this. This is it. It's all I have to go. Confused, they see feeling as a self or the self as a feeling. Now, how many times do we project our fear or resentment on another person and blame them for how we feel? We're creating an identity over that. Confused, they see their perceptions as self and the self as possessing perceptions. possessing perceptions. These perceptions are mine. Now that I've created it, it's me, it's mine, I have an identity over it. More I-making. Confused, they see their fabrications as self or their self as their fabrications. Confused, they see their consciousness as self or their self as their consciousness. In other words, just because I'm having this train of thought, it must be reality. This is what is meant by becoming entangled with the world. The Buddha continues, and how is one not entangled with the world? A follower of the Dhamma, who is well-versed and well-trained in the Dhamma, does not see the form as self or the self-possessing form. With right view established, they do not see feeling as the self or the self-possessing feelings. In other words, there's a movement in the mind, and it may be something that in the past we would identify with, such as something that might have brought anger, or maybe incredible, excitable joy. We recognize this is not me, this is not mine. Our minds remain calm and at peace. And what does that allow us to do? If it's something that is a wonderful experience that we may have formed an attachment on, we are able to remain mindfully present and appreciate it fully. And what if it's something that in the past might have caused us to run away from it or wish it wasn't occurring? Again, we can stay mindfully present and have a meaningful moment in something that in the past we would have had aversion to. An auspicious day, we're staying mindfully present with what's occurring. It does not need to be any different. We don't have to attach it to something that may have happened in the past, and we don't have to get thrown into the future. We simply stay mindful with what's occurring. Where was I? With right view established, they do not see consciousness as the self or the self-possessing consciousness. I missed a couple lines. Let me go back to it. With right view established, they do not see perceptions as self or the self-possessing perceptions. With right view established, they do not see fabrications as self or the self-possessing fabrications. With right view established, they do not see consciousness as the self or the self-possessing consciousness. This is called not being entangled with the world. And again, he's referencing the five clinging aggregates in a very direct way. There's no inherent substance to this. This is just a term that the Buddha used, and I continue to use, and other teachers continue to use, to describe a state that itself is rooted in ignorance. So the value of that is just to recognize this is an impermanent psychophysical state that with the right understanding, it simply vanishes. Again, the Buddha would refer to it as like foam on the ocean. And this is also the same thing as anatta, what the Buddha said is not a self, meaning that the views that we have of a self don't constitute a self. Let go of the views. And you could really say that everything that the Buddha would teach has to do with recognizing self-referential views and letting them all go, because all of those views are rooted in ignorance. Is that clear?
I think it's a little issue with the whole idea. I mean, you say it's just a word to describe it. Consciousness, to me, is something more than a fabrication or a perception.
Great comment, Judy. Remember the context that we're talking about. We're talking about developing understanding of the Four Noble Truths. And it is only in this context that it's useful to apply even that. So it is an ongoing thought process that's rooted in ignorance that causes all of this to arise. Once we can develop understanding, there's no longer ignorance. And it's a very specific ignorance of Four Noble Truths. Once that understanding has been developed, we're able to stay mindfully present with life as life occurs. And so we don't get caught up in form, feeling, perceptions, mental fabrications, driving that ongoing ignorant consciousness. And again, the Buddha's not saying, and I'm not saying, that because we're human beings, we're just downright ignorant, and that's as far as we can go. It's a very specific type of ignorance. It's ignorance of Four Noble Truths. We're all able to function in the world to some degree or another. But as far as developing understanding, the way the Buddha describes understanding, and another way of saying that, in order for us to develop right view, we have to first accept that we have wrong view. And that wrong view is something, is an ongoing thought process that's rooted in ignorance. Right. To develop an auspicious day, remain present with your life as your life occurs. Do not chase the past or project your thoughts onto the future. Remain free of entanglements with the world and mindful of what is occurring. Be mindful of impermanence and uncertainty. Those that do so will have an auspicious day. And he concludes it with saying, I've never read this anywhere, I might have missed it. He concludes it with saying, so says this peaceful sage. Can you imagine? I mean, you can almost picture being there when you hear those personal comments. And this is such a personal sutta, too, when you think about that. You go back 2,600 years, and you're gathered with the Buddha, and he points out to all of you, this could be the day. This could be such an auspicious day. Engage with the Dhamma, develop that refined mindfulness, and stay present with life as life occurs. Don't get stuck in the past. Don't project your thoughts into the future. Stay here with what's occurring. So there's a little bit, I have some more comments after that, but you can read it on your own if you want. I've made most of the comments as we've gone along. Coming here tonight, I was thinking about this sutta. And again, I know I say it often, but just how fortunate I am, and I'll project that onto you, just how fortunate we all are to have these teachings of this incredible human being from 2,600 years ago, and they're still here in this pure form. And it really speaks to having an auspicious day, doesn't it? And also maybe to remember this tomorrow, too, that tomorrow can be another auspicious day. And any day is auspicious if we continue to incline our minds towards awakening, to utilize this very simple and direct path that he gave us through right effort, through continuing with our meditation practice, for deepening our understanding and integration of the Eightfold Path, and to actually have the experience of one auspicious day after another. We are truly fortunate. So that's the end of the talk. I'd like to hear what you have to say about this, if you have any questions, or just about your meditation practice. We'll start with Matt. Matt, good to see you tonight.
Good to see you, John. Good to see everybody. I really like this sutta. To me, it was also a teaching on emptiness.
Yeah.
In that, if I empty the future of my projections, then it's what's occurring.
Yeah.
If I empty the past of trying to fix it, then it's just what occurred.
Yeah.
So emptying or dropping or letting go of these self-referential views is what allows life to occur as it is occurring. As soon as it's my future, or the things that I want to populate my future, or the things that happened already that I am ruminating on or need to fix, then I suffer. I potentially suffer the disappointment of the future not being how I hoped it would go.
And you set that up yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
So it does seem also like a teaching on emptiness. And
yeah.
And even also a teaching about there are no special days. Every day is special.
Yeah.
In that, you know, in certain traditions, certain times of the year are auspicious for particular rituals or particular planetary and celestial occurrences. And I just think maybe, you know, hey, maybe people were questioning the Buddha about that, and he said,
sure.
Hey, you guys want to know about an auspicious day and what that means?
That may have been the lead into this, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not mentioned in the sutta itself, but there was a lot of, you know, different practices, and they all had their special days, and it continues to this day, you know. And you're so right about emptiness. That is another way of saying, that's another foundational teaching. Everything the Buddha teaches points to that, to emptiness. When he describes emptiness, it's not as a some kind of amorphous environment that we're part of, or that's a true reality. He uses that term to say that we should empty ourselves of clinging to the world and empty the world of ourselves, like Matt described it, to not project yourself into the future. When you're emptying yourself of the world, you wouldn't do that anymore. You know, that's, and that's the only useful teaching on emptiness. By the way, our one-day retreat, April 9th, is going to be on emptiness of clinging. So I hope you all come to that, too. There's info on the website about that. So. Thank you, Matt. Stefan, good to see you tonight.
Good to see you, too. I don't think I had ever encountered this sutta, and it is fun. It's nice.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know. I don't have anything else to say.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here, and I love that haircut. Kevin, good to see you.
Good to see you, John. Thank you for that talk. I really appreciated it. And today was sort of an uncertain day, or just a mundane day, and taking refuge here was sort of auspicious in that sense. Right. I let go of what should have been happening, was comfortable, what's going on, what's happening as it occurs. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Glad you're here tonight. Ram, good to see you.
Good to see you. Good to see everybody. I don't think I have much to add today.
I'm glad you're here. Judy, good to see you.
Good to see you. Good to be there. I don't have much to add, except that it reminds me that I like the sutta, and it reminds me of something I've been thinking about recently a lot, is whether I'm going into, you know, I mean, a situation that I've been in before many times, and that I don't like it, or I do like it, that it's, I've been aware of kind of looking at it like, even though I've been in this sort of situation before, this is a new time for this, and to look at it with curiosity, yeah, like something different may happen, and I may feel differently about this time. And so that's just something that's been, I've been thinking about recently. So it's an opportunity then, right?
Yeah.
To have something different. And, yeah.
There's great wisdom in that. That no matter, even if the same exact scene can always be different. But if you drag what it was into it, then you're clouding your own experience. It's great. Practical application of the Dhamma. Thank you. Andrew, good to see you tonight. How are you?
Well, thank you.
Good.
It all points to just chilling out. Being more easily understood.
The chilling out sutta. Huh?
It's too cultured. And when you do that, it's an auspicious time.
Yeah.
So you don't care so much about it. What you have to do tomorrow. That is, you don't. I mean, you got a plan, but maybe you don't have to plan.
You're not creating an identity over the plan. Helen brought this up in kind of a tangential way last week, too.
Anyway, that's the struggle for me, the balance of how the next day or week's activity is going to play out, but at the same time be really chill about it, you know?
Well, that is a difficulty at first, because again, Helen touched on this a little bit last week, and it's kind of an underlying theme too. If I don't take myself so seriously, what's going to motivate me to do something tomorrow or the next day or the next week? Well, you don't need that. We when you let go of all these self-referential views, you develop this very powerful trust in yourself that you'll do the right thing. And why? Because you're mindfully present. You know what to do in each situation. The Buddha used to, people that didn't really understand the Buddha would give him superhuman powers because he was so effective in everything that he did. But that's only because he had this extreme high level of refined mindfulness. He knew what to do. We don't have to worry about what we're going to do tomorrow to perform well tomorrow. And most of our worries about stuff that we're going to be doing anyway. In other words, we're going to get up and go to work tomorrow. We're going to get up and go to the doctor, or get up and take a walk. That's going to happen. We don't have to think about it. We don't have to worry about it. We don't have to project onto it. We can just do it when it's ready to go. Now, if there's things that we have to prepare for, that's something different. And if we're doing that in a dispassionate way, not taking things personally, we just do it. That's just part of living a human life. But when we start creating identities, remember the Buddha's referring to the five clinging aggregates here. when we're carrying this identity around with us, now we're in trouble. Now we're stuck in the past or projected into the future, and we're missing our life. We're missing what's occurring right here. So, thank you. Mary, good to see you.
It's great to meet you. This isn't great.
See, I get myself all excited thinking, I wonder if anybody else is going to really like this. I'm glad you like it.
Future
worry. Yeah, I was worried about it all day. In fact, I almost didn't come.
It's going to be planning.
Like so many things that are light bulbs that go off of awareness, just for me, you know, permission not to have to look back or look forward, it's just liberating. It's to have enough confidence that the work ahead of me for the day is the work that I should be, you know, that I still have to organize myself and I still have to prepare in advance, but I don't have to prepare out of fear or out of concern that, you know, I might not do a great presentation or I might not make the sale or whatever it is I'm doing, and that just being confident in knowing that I'm putting my best, it's like listening to your mother's advice when you were little. It all just makes sense. Yeah, like just know you're good enough. Of course you're supposed to be there. Just put your best effort in and it'll all be fine. And doing that in a present moment way, you know, I almost think so much of my life has been, you know, things related to the past, things related to the future, so that there was like a skinny sliver for now. You know,
that's right.
It was all about where I was coming from, where I was going. Maybe right up until right now, I don't know. But it's, you know, it's just very liberating to think. Because I think the concept is hard, just now, or be here now, or, you know, present moment. I mean, that's really hard. And I think part of the way you approach your teaching is to tell us what it's not. You know, mm-hmm. So you use the example of the picture and then the negative, you know, the outline and then the negative. And that's like how you have to learn all this stuff in order to unlearn the stuff you learned your whole life.
Yeah.
Is it flips it all on its side and you have to see what it's not in order to shine a light onto what you're doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, very, really, the emptiness, like, that's something that wouldn't have made sense to me a year ago, but I can understand, you know, that would have had a negative connotation. I can understand how Matt uses that in the sentence to explain what we're trying to, the wisdom we're trying to obtain right now. So, really wonderful.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for all that. A lot of the Dhamma, even not just what the Buddha was talking about, but what we develop, is via negativa. We have to be willing. This is the other, you know, kind of a side comment on the power of positive thinking. It's not, because we're missing what's really occurring in here. And so emptiness of self, to some people, sounds like a horrible idea. Yeah. Until you understand the proper context, and it's the most liberating idea we can come up with. So we have to be willing to look at the struggles that we have maintaining self-referential views if we're going to have any motivation at all to let them go. Right. You know, that's what's occurring.
Well, and then, and the past and the future is helpful because you can hear that. You can hear words. It's not just your thinking, which sometimes it's harder to catch your thinking as you're trying to develop your self-awareness, but you can often hear it in your words, what you're saying to someone, and you can feel, I'm totally anchored in the past, or I'm totally, you know, my kids can call it out, Mom, future worry, you're in future worry. I'm like, I think that's the definition of mother. I'm pretty sure I'm allowed, you know, but now as my children are getting older and I'm going through that transition of, you know, having kids in high school to kids in college and, you know, imagining them on their own and all that, I, you know, that would be no way to live in worry about them all the time anymore, you know. So letting that go is good, it's been very helpful, And my daughter had an incident being in London where she and her friends were at risk, and everything's fine. But I didn't jump out of my skin when I got the call because I was just very calm. And the fact I was telling at dinner tonight that she's fine now, so there's nothing to get upset about.
Yeah. But that's remarkable, Mary. You were able to maintain your mindfulness during that. I mean, that really is.
We really did. I mean, my husband did. I did. We were on the phone with her, and she's describing, and she had a big reaction to it, but she was better now. And I'm pretty sure she got off the phone going, I wasn't expecting that. I could have used a little, oh, my God!
What have you done with my mother?
It's better she didn't call me.
You're going to have to call Aunt Liz for that. Right? But that in itself is very rewarding and very encouraging and just validating of everything that you just said.
Yeah.
It was. You live it, you see it.
Yeah, even something like that ended up being an auspicious moment, wasn't it?
Mm.
You know? Well, good for you. Thank you for sharing that. Helen, good evening. It's good to see you.
Good evening, John. Good evening, everyone. Between Matt and Mary, they've both kind of said a lot of what's been going on in my mind. When Matt started to use the word emptying, I thought of a vessel and your body or yourself or as a vessel, and when you empty it, you allow other things to come in as they will. And the word that I came up with was liberating, which Mary used as well, so that if you empty yourself of expectations, which I think Andrew and I have talked about, you know, having our own small businesses, that every day we build our day around expectations of what needs to happen and who needs to do it and who needs to be satisfied that it's done. But I suppose if you take that to the level of, and it will be what it will be, and relieve yourself of the stress of something not turning out the way that you wanted it to, that sort of liberates you as a vessel.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And then that leads to, if I really want to be the most effective I can in any situation, wake up. You know, learn how to be well concentrated and develop that refined mindfulness of knowing how to act, because that's the most important thing I can do. You reminded me of something, talking about that, the empty vessel. Years and years and years ago, I don't know, I was 30 or something maybe.
A couple years ago.
I had a teacher, his name was Uncle George Naoki, who was a Hawaiian shaman. He kind of took me under his wing more so than most people would. Even back then, if you weren't real Hawaiian, you usually didn't get the teaching that I got, but he was an incredible teacher. And one of the things that he taught me, and looking back, I think he taught me this so he would get what he got, but he taught me that the greatest honor you could give someone in his understanding, in his tradition, but it's rooted in ancient Hawaiiana, is to give somebody an empty bowl. Because then you're giving them the possibility for everything. Mm-hmm. Rather than fill it up with fruit, because that's all you got. It might seem like a nice thing to have all these lilikois in there. You know, they're delicious, but there's no room for anything else. Mm-hmm. An empty bowl. So just before he died, I gave him an empty bowl. One of the high points of my life, and his too. So. Emptiness of clinging. And you think about that, just the idea was, it was this little teak bowl about that high. If you think about it, there's nothing in the bowl. There's none of me in there either, is there? I could have filled it up with diamonds to make a point, you know, or anything. There's nothing there. This is how we view ourselves in relation to the world. There's really nothing here permanent. Mary was talking about the power of now. There is no such thing as this present moment. There in physical time, you can separate a moment out. Our minds cannot perceive that. We don't catch this exact moment. But what we can do is to be mindfully present of the ongoing process of having a human life. And that's where the real power of now is. It's understanding this process that's ongoing. That's always empty of self, empty of a permanent self. And then that points to the potential that each moment has. Each moment holds the potential to have an auspicious moment or to remain in ignorance and have an inauspicious moment. None of those around here. Diane, good to see you tonight. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. I'm glad to see everybody too. This is good, and it's fun. One of the things that I guess I've been thinking is, you know, in meditation, stuff comes up, and one of the things that came up recently was that, and don't anyone be shocked or anything, but I hate my father. And I realized how deep that anger was. It was what deep the anger. And I've been kind of working with it. And it's so great to have the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path to work with something like this. Because when it came up, I thought, oh, well, that's probably why, I have all these troubles in this area and that area and stuff. This has been a block, and I don't have to stay there. I can, and then the emptiness comes in. It's like what we're talking tonight. It's like I have had feelings and thoughts around this relationship with my father, and I can, like, take that out of the bowl and it doesn't have to be who I am anymore.
Yep.
And it's really kind of exciting that I, you know, that this, the, you know, in...
I get you. Okay.
Shut up.
Yeah. No. I get you precisely.
Yeah.
You said it. It's really good.
Yeah, and there's a lot of other things that, you know, through meditation that come up that I'm beginning to see, oh, okay, I can, you know, let that, and that's where I see Matt's talking about the emptiness and the emptying the bowl and stuff, but these identifications that I have, I was even thinking that on the way here, getting ready to come, you know what, nobody cares what I look like. That's really cool. And so that's another thing that I can take out of there.
Bowl's getting light. And that's what it's called, by the way.
What?
Oh, that's what it in the bowl. It's called a bowl of light, meaning there's nothing in it. So that you're right. You know.
L-I-T-E.
However you want to spell it. So you're describing. You've emptied the bowl of a lot of self-referential views, including how I look, including that self-referential view that I hate my dad. Take it out of the bowl. It's such a great visual. You know, we can do that with anything.
It is so cool. So to be able to, I mean, I just think the ramifications of that is, oh, I, it's like in the last couple of weeks, someone has said, or it's been said, or I read, or something like, to be able to choose what I think. And when the thoughts like that come around, I can say, oh, okay, that's not in the bowl anymore.
In the Vatthakasiddhanta Sutta, the Buddha concludes that sutta with saying you gain the ability to think what you want to think when you want to think it. Meaning you're not driven by conditioned thinking anymore. You think what's occurring right here.
That planning thing in the future kind of, I really struggle with that with my son. He really wants to know what my 5-year plan is.
Tell him.
He wants to know what your 5-year plan is? Oh.
Tell him you plan on meditating for the next 5 years.
And what will be and will be.
Just call him and say, I'm going to empty the bowl.
Yeah, that's it.
Get out of the bowl.
And then I'm going to float.
Thank you, Diane. Gina, I'm going to get to you at the end, if you don't mind. Judy, it's good to see you.
Well,
welcome to our Sangha.
Oh, you're most welcome. Nice to see everybody. It's a nice big Sangha. I like it. It's the old thing with me. It's, you know, between, you know, the future. You know, my family has told me repeatedly, you don't remember anything we tell you.
And I've said that to you, too.
Yeah. So remember.
And there is some truth in what they say. And that's because as they're saying it, I'm saying, okay, they want, I need to do, I'm out of the moment.
Yeah.
I'm already thinking, if anything happens at work, if I'm not writing it down exactly as I'm saying it, it's gone because I'm already thinking what I need to do with it next instead of digesting it or listening to people. And so... And again, the same whole thing with the future. You can plan for the future and be mindful when you're planning it, but you to be thinking about the future when you're not supposed to be thinking, when it doesn't serve you to think about the future. That's what I'm trying to be, you know. And these things are terrible. I have found myself, I didn't get a smartphone until like last year, and now I'm already addicted. And so... And so I gotta put that thing down and be mindful of people. And I think that will just help me remember things. You know, obviously, I have a bad memory. Maybe I'm just not listening.
Yeah, or maybe not present. These phones have gotten really smart, and they have this thing on there called a button. You can turn them off.
Well, the problem is people say something, and I can go look that up. And then I'm no longer in the present with them.
A lot of distractions.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're here. Well, again, welcome to our Sangha.
Thank you.
Lorna, good to see you tonight. How are you?
Thank you. Good to see everybody. When I was reading the sutta, I hadn't realized when you do think of the past and you do think of the future, you just... absorb your memories with the five clinging aggregates.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think of yourself in the past, you just think of how you are with the five clinging aggregates.
Yep, you can't help it, but
drag
that with you. That's
yeah.
your
right.
that's
your
wrong view.
And
that ignorance is pervasive. No matter where you project yourself to, the past or the future, it's there. And you can't help but see it from that.
And I hadn't put... You just... constantly eye-making when you're thinking of things in the past or trying to think of things in the future. It's constant. That's the only reason why you do it. You just... It's just eye-making.
Yeah.
So, until I read this sutta, I hadn't put all that together. And I was kind of a little bit blown away with just how much this sutta has change me or enlighten me, I should say, into my thinking.
Yeah.
You know, that if you're not in the present and you're doing all this stuff in the past and all this, which people do all the time, whether they're driving the cars or in the shower or whatever we do, we're always thinking about something else, either in the past or in the future. And it's really kind of enlightened me, as I say, that putting the five clinging aggregates together in your thoughts in the past and the thoughts in the future, and I'm making. It's just like your eye making and your fracking out. They just flourish in your memories and in the future predictions. It's just the ground for them just to flourish.
Yep.
It's been very enlightening for me to look at this sutra. Thank you.
Thank you. Liz, good to see you.
Good to see you. It's good to be here. I like going always back to the idea that when you're sitting in meditation, the only thing you have to do at that moment is breathe.
Yep.
And that you don't have to memorize the five clinging aggregates.
Nope.
And you don't have to, you know, remember the anagraman for the Eightfold Path and, you know, all those things you do in your head while you're supposed to be meditating. So it's good to remember that in the moment too, as you sort of work your way through the day. And the idea of what Diane was saying of coming to the realization that you carry such strong feelings for someone who may or may not be in your life at the present moment. I had an insight a while ago about how, you know, my particular feelings for an individual allowed in that odd way of keeping that person in my life, you know, that clinging, whether it's positive or negative.
Yep.
And if I were to let go of those feelings, I was letting go of this individual. And so that, anyway, that was helpful to me to see that, you know, you can empty the bowl and let these things go, and that sort of might define why you're holding on to someone, because without those feelings, you aren't having a connection in a weird way.
Yeah, you don't.
You know? So anyway, this was nice. I hadn't heard this before or read it before, and it was a good one. It's a good one to reread.
Mm. I agree.
Thank you, John.
Thank you. Bonnie, good to see you.
Good to see you. I think the more awake I can be, you know, during my day, I think the more successful I am in my work, because that means I can be present and sit with people and really listen and be able to follow a question with the next question, not what I want to do or because of my anxiety that might come up in that. So the more that I can be present and be clear about what's occurring, it's really useful. I was joking before, but sometimes when things are happening, my brain goes really fast, and I'm like, oh, you know. So it's not even just planning. It's like, which one do I want to think about, you know? And then having to make a choice about slowing myself down and being present and being a better listener. But something that you just said made me think about when you're thinking about the bowl and the empty bowl. And, you know, certainly if it's empty, then I can choose what I want to put in, and I can bear sadness or sorrow or some of the heavier feelings. But then I was thinking about, you know, some of the people in our lives in my past, you know, I have a lot of love for them. And so I was thinking that I just had this image that the bowl is made up of the things and the gifts that people have given me. That it's like, you know, for me, I always think about a tree as being a metaphor that I like a lot, and I think about a lot, and I use it sometimes. But you know that as the tree grows, there are parts of us that are it's the things that we've learned. You know, so yeah. Maybe the marks in the, if it is a wooden bowl, there's marks in the wood, and those are maybe reminders of what we love, what we can let go of. Of how I got here, and I, you know, I don't know if that fits in, but to the idea of self being selfless and not a, but it for me the way that I can make sense and not have my hair on fire is that I'm present, and then I'm not present, and I can see it, and I understand, and I can be present by becoming back to my breath. That's the metaphor of becoming. Be present and listen. You have to fix this. So
yeah.
I really need to give myself permission that it's okay to step back from being able to witness how you did this in the past. I can, you know, the work is how can I step back and make a different choice. I don't know.
No, that's a great metaphor. The tree and the Dhamma is not an escape in any way, including an escape from our past. It's a recognition that everything that has occurred is part of this process, but not to create an identity over it. So just as a concept, it's described in when the Buddha described dukkha. You know, birth, sickness, aging, and death is an aspect of suffering, not getting what you want. is suffering. Getting what you don't want is all part of suffering. In short, the five clinging aggregates are dukkha, are suffering. Every human life is prone to those things. That's what the Buddha's teaching, and when he says that dukkha occurs or life is dukkha, he's not saying it's just a crappy experience. He's saying that it's part of life to have disappointing experiences. Stop running away from it and stop insisting that it only be pleasurable. It's all of it. And when we can let go of our self-identities, there can be great healing from stuff that happened in the past that we've been dragging around with us for our whole life. Because now I'm no longer identified by it. It's something that occurred, but it doesn't define me. When I counsel people in alcoholism and drug addiction and other compulsive behaviors, I often start right there. Don't let your, to use the word loosely, don't let your disease define you, because it doesn't. It's just one aspect of who you are, the same as anything else. But we start creating identities over this, over a lot of things that happen. Things that happen, you know, many, many years ago, because we're attached to them. And we don't see them in any different way. And we create identities. We start growing this tree of ourselves with all kinds of limbs attached to all different things. We don't have to do that. Another auspicious day. Thank you. Gina, welcome to our Sangha. Would you like to say? And how was your meditation?
I'd like to say I'm just delighted to find this. I'm so happy.
An auspicious day.
Yeah, for sure. I came here from upstate New York in the Hudson Valley.
Oh, okay.
And there's a lot of really fine, well, not only Buddhist, but all kinds of things going on.
Yeah.
There in Woodstock, etc. And then we had a group that I belonged to that was Tibetan Buddhist. Mm-hmm. And this is so different. Because they come in and they're really quiet. And they all sit down for, we sit for an hour and 15 minutes. But you get up and walk around, do a, in between. And so I didn't really know people. You know, I mean, some of I knew out of the circle, but there wasn't anybody that we didn't really talk much. Yeah. People just came in and we did this thing and everybody left, and there wasn't anybody leading it. Mm. In all fairness, most of them were very, very experienced meditators and whatever. So anyway, this is a very refreshing change.
Great.
I just moved here. So I'm into Frenchtown.
Wow, great.
I did live in New Hope from 68 to
79. That's a good time to be in New Hope.
And I was married to an artist named Nelson Shanks, and who was a famous portrait painter. And anyway, so I have all kinds of roots here. I came back and lived in Stockton again about 10 years ago, but now I'm back here, and I have a son and daughter-in-law who live here, and I'm just amazed at how many friends. And so I find this is an extremely exciting time. It has not been easy. I've had some physical problems to deal with, but when you get to be as old as I am, you get so that I have gotten so that when something happens, I immediately figured, say, okay, what are you trying to teach me now? What's the lesson this time? Because looking back, I can see every difficulty. I think of that saying, you know, may all beings find happiness, may all beings be free from suffering, and may all beings find the happiness that's beyond suffering. That's so pertinent, you know, that to look at everything with curiosity and openness. And in this political climate right now, with the way the world is going, I kind of feel that there's its potential, because out of chaos can come the new form.
Yep.
So there are all kinds of things that are sort of bubbling, popping up, and, you know, women's issues and everything. It's almost like Trump is like an acupuncturist going around and jamming things.
And he's very good at it, too.
So, for a background a little bit, I spent 50 years working with Native American elders and shaman, and
I have been a Sufi since 79, and but I'm not as active in that anymore. But I'm very, very connected to that whole way of being. I've been to India 6 times and climbed up to Kedarnath with Hindu teachers. And my most latest incarnation is Tibetan Buddhism. So, I mean, I'm not experienced in this, but one of the things that the Sufis say is, all paths followed with devotion lead to the same place. Mm-hmm. And that really resonates for me, and I'm always finding the similarities in all these different paths. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of an affirmation.
Well, again, welcome to our Sangha. The meditation technique that we use, again, it's called Shamatha Vipassana. There's a recording of it on my website that you can download and listen to if you want.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I teach this meditation within the broader framework that the Buddha taught it, which is the Eightfold Path. In other words, he didn't teach just meditation alone. In fact, that's an important component, but not any more important than the other 7 factors of the Eightfold Path. And as you can see, that the class is just like this, and that I teach something related to the Buddha's teachings. I don't teach anything that isn't found in the Pali Canon, which often contradicts a lot of modern Buddhism. But I don't teach it to be contradictory, just that this is what the Buddha taught. I studied in fact, I took my vows in a Tibetan lineage called Kagyu, which you're probably aware of.
Where is it?
Well, there's a monastery in Woodstock there, KTD.
And that's it?
Yeah, I thought that was it. So I took my vows there quite a few years ago now, and I eventually renounced the vows because Tibetan wasn't doing it for me. And then I studied in Zen schools, and I spent a lot of time up at John Laurie's place, Zen Mountain Monastery, and went through kind of the same process. It didn't do it for me. And it wasn't until I came back and looked at what the Buddha actually taught that then it had real meaning and real effectiveness for me. So that's what I teach here.
Mm-hmm.
There's a yellow pamphlet out there that describes this meditation in a little bit more detail, so please take that. And on my website, there's years of talks.
And the website's on the yellow thing?
Pardon me?
Your website
Yes.
is on
it. Yep. And then I hope you continue to join us.
Yeah, so. I'm sure I will.
Great. Well, again, a great class. We'll finish with metta. You mentioned metta before. I'll finish all my classes with that. But before, we have our next one-day retreat. It's April 9th on a Sunday. Starts at 10, ends around 3. Matt will start us off with some Qigong and be a couple of sessions during the day. The theme is emptiness of clinging, so I'll give a talk on that. And then the afternoon talk will be on the mindfulness of Bahia, which ties into all of this. And it ties. It'll be another auspicious day for all of us.
Is it here?
Right here.
Oh, okay.
Right here. The info on the website. And then our residential retreat. Do you know of the Juan Dharma Center up in Hudson?
Who?
The Juan Dharma Center just outside of Hudson, New York?
Yeah, absolutely.
Our spring retreat, May 11th to 14th, is there. It'll be our 4th or 5th retreat up there. So that's coming up. If you're going to join us, you know, please sign up as soon as you can. But it's okay to sign up at the last minute, too.
Oh, is that Mother's Day?
I don't think it... No, I wouldn't have made it. I think it's a weekend before or two. Starts on a Thursday night, ends on a Sunday.
Mother's Day.
Yeah, it is Mother's 14th.
Mother's Day is the 14th. I was careful not to do that. But it's an auspicious Mother's Day to be up here.
Is it really?
Well,
it's early this year.
Well, all you mothers, give yourself a great gift of being in retreat.
I'm still
in.
John, what time is the retreat on the 9th?
It starts at 10, and we should be done, you know, 2:30 or 3 o'clock.
Okay.
So, yeah, I hope you can all join us. It's always a nice thing to do, auspicious day. Yeah, bring a dish to share if you can. We'll have a nice potluck lunch. And just a day immersed in the Dhamma. So.
When do the Thursday classes start happening?
April 6th. Thank you for reminding me.
April 6th.
Yeah, not next week, but the week after. No, not this Thursday, but next week. I'll start because I'm not teaching in Clinton anymore. But I will be doing a lecture series the first Wednesday of every month up in Clinton. So. All right. Any questions, comments? We'll finish with the Buddha's words on metta. So find your relaxed meditative posture and gently close your eyes and gently close your mouths. and take a moment to become aware of the sensation of breathing in your body, and let that mindfulness of your breath cease any distracting thoughts to the past or to the future, or that may have arisen from our talk today. And metta is both an aspiration for those of us developing the Eightfold Path and an expression of a fully awakened, fully mature human being. And these are the Buddha's words on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing, in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you all for a wonderful class. Peace. Thank you for listening. Please visit crossrivermeditation.com for guided meditations and instruction and Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos. We rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Please feel free to contact me through crossrivermeditation.com. Peace.